The True False podcast is made possible with the support of the University of Missouri and the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival. Idea of yourself gets thrown on the screen. You get to alter it, turn it around inside out, and then get it back again.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, we sit in on a conversation between Lila Weinraub, director of Shakedown, and Ramel Ross, who made the film Hale County This Morning, This Evening. Both films played at the fest this year. Shakedown dives into the lives of the so-called angels of a Black lesbian strip club in the early 2000s. Meanwhile, Hale County This Morning, This Evening explores the passing of time and lives in the American South. This conversation, Rejoice, was part of our True False 2018 field session. The session was billed as a discussion about how Ross and Weinraub are seeking to reshape documentary grammar and expand the way films view Black bodies. And just a heads up, there are some curse words in this episode that we've left in. Here's Lila Weinraub.
I enjoyed your film. It was
mutual,
like...
Mutual?
It was chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like something about it that's like... meditative, and I think it's like, you know nothing like scary is gonna happen. There's something therapeutic about it too, because it's like very chill.
Yeah,
it's like normal.
Yeah,
it's like there's years of that work that needs to happen.
So many.
You know.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like there's a lot of filling in of gaps that literally is the problem with Black representation, is that we're missing so much stuff, you know, that we see every day, which is one reason why I really loved your film, was because I grew up in like middle class kind of suburbs. And when I went to Alabama, I've spent the majority of my time like hanging out with guys and like makeshift clubs and like just being on the ground in the rural South. And I would never have imagined that the aesthetics of, it's mainly Los Angeles, right? Was similar to the aesthetics of the rural South. Like, there's a parallel there. And the club scenes, I was, like, immediately familiar. And then I was like, damn, why have I not seen just actual indexical footage of these places? Obviously, because most Black folks aren't artists are making films for various reasons, but... Yeah, and it wasn't put together pretentiously either. Like, you didn't turn it into... I feel like you tried to represent the aesthetics of the film itself, tried to represent the aesthetics of the place itself, and almost one-to-one, where you were like, what would the film be if it was going to be, like, there on the screen, or if they, like... Which was really interesting. Yeah, I have way more things to say.
Sam!
I really loved the time span that you... that you illustrated, and also you went from like really beautiful, like clear and crisp shots of a person in their house, and then her and people dancing in a club scene when it was really gritty. And for me, it's like the perfect parallel between the performativity in which people take on in those spaces, and then like the calm and domestic space of the home and the way in which people are people in their space. It was like so clear and so natural, and it made me think of Black performativity and in public, for one, as one thing.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I had to get that off my chest. Yeah, it's been way in heavenly. Yeah, I wonder when you were making the film, if you like, what did you expect to do with the footage? Because when I first started making my film, I knew I wanted to make a film, but I didn't know, you know, and like, so how does that work for you, especially when like your stuff is a lot. Is like more upfrontly raw, and mine's more like banally raw. And so, like, what were you?
I mean, it was like different. It's a show.
Yeah.
One's a show, one's a just like being around people, you know. The whole process of that is like so it changes. You know how it is. It's like you spend time, you're learning the project, you're learning like who wants to even participate in this with you, you know. I think that there's like a lot of people that I wanted to film and they didn't want to be filmed. And they were like, well, my life is private. There's some people that want to talk about their lives, you know, and have enough kind of insight, like in their emotions, to be able to share that with you, you know. Do you think that like your film is a portrait of yourself in some way?
Yeah.
Like how though?
In its aspiration, mainly.
What do you mean?
In what, you know, I hope the film has the capacity to achieve. In the way in which I believe a way of understanding subjectivity and its relationship to like conformist ways of making things needs to be investigated.
Right.
You know? But let's not talk about me. Let's like, okay,
cool. No, I'm like, I wanted to talk about the, is it okay if I just
yeah, go ahead
into that for 1 second? What is you're like, okay, so aspiration. We yeah. both said that.
Both. Yeah.
But what is that? Can you just say what that means?
You know, like the film in some sense is attempting to be a huge thing. Like it wants to be omniscient. It wants to like contain enough meanings to exhaust the mind. Like it wants to be complex enough to be appreciated, not to be reduced or not to be categorized or not to be sort of projected upon into something that's counter-revelatory, you know? And I think as a person, as myself, as a, like growing up as an athlete and playing sports, the pressure to be a person or a certain type of person, or to be the quote unquote basketball mindset or the way in which you are a basketball player is like such a tragic way of being looked upon.
What is it?
You know, like anything from the dumb jock to the pure object, you know, which is so like beyond oppressive. And it happens in many ways in society. It's not just sports. But I think that's where, well, I think my disappointment comes from like in inability to be perfect, which comes from sports as well. Like you can't make all your shots, no matter how many, how hard you try. And the film is like trying to explain that we're all sort of like condemned to our like needs, our needs. We're condemned to our desires or something.
So you're saying that it's aspirationally expansive.
Yeah.
And that's how you feel too.
Yeah, but I don't want that. I don't want that to come across
as joking.
Yeah. You know. Thanks. I'm like, damn. I'm like, yeah. Speaking.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, this is a very inside conversation. I wouldn't normally speak with that much pretension, I guess, because people look down on like people being like to thinking spectacular is like somehow a sign of something negative, you know.
When you get asked to do like podcasts or interviews like this, and people say stuff like black bodies, even say that sentence to you, like how does that make you feel? What do you think about that?
I don't know, because it's such a code word now, you know? Like, I feel like I knew more about that before everybody was saying it. And now that everyone's saying it, it's, like, diluted somehow. And now it's more, it seems like...
I think it's weird.
Yeah. Do people say it to you a lot?
I really don't like it when people say it, so I try to avoid letting them finish the sentence.
Yeah?
I mean, it's weird. Maybe inside a really rare black film world that was discussing skin tone itself. Maybe that gets talked about. But I don't really find exactly that way of talking inside my world.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't really like, it feels really like, I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't really get it.
God, that's so true. No black people in outside of like that, the academic space or that are writing or doing like say black bodies in that way. It's just not like, I don't think anyone in Alabama said black bodies before. My friends,
it sounds like
black people.
Body bag. it doesn't sound nice.
You said like a body bag.
It sounds like black bag. Like, I'm like, what is that? Like, it sounds goth.
It sounds a little like horror, but maybe I'm being like negative. It doesn't sound like it has a lot of power. Yeah. It sounds like it's like describing the process of being like pointed at, which it's trying to address that issue, but at the same time it's addressing the issue, it's doing it again. I'm like, that sentence is fucking weird.
Yeah. It's like it's literally creating another space of objectification in order to describe.
It doesn't feel chill.
It doesn't feel chill. God, the old black body. I like how you said it really fast. Then that like really puts like the B and B together. Where you're like, what is this alliteration? Like, can we at least move away from poetry with it? Can we like?
There's something about your movie that like kind of gets really far away from whatever that sentence too. Hmm. Where you're like, there's just some people that are so cute, you know. And you're just like, oh. Yeah. It's healing to just have like simple cuteness, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, and when a dad hugs a like son, you're like,
yeah.
You know, and I think that that's therapeutic. I feel like therapy, it is in a way looking at your film, because it's about mirroring. Therapy is a mirroring experience.
Yeah.
It's like you get to see yourself reflected back, or your idea of yourself changes in the space of like the room of watching a film. Your idea of yourself gets thrown on the screen. You get to alter it, turn it around inside out, and then get it back again, and maybe like leave with a different order of operations about the way you think about humanity. It's tenderizing, you know?
You know, when I was watching your film, like, I don't know, maybe it was about 8 minutes in, I was like, I've never seen, and I could be awfully wrong by labeling it this way, I was like, I've never seen a feminist utopia before. And then after the film, you said utopia a couple times, and I was like, damn, that was like something that was a revelation for me. But it was like incredibly, it was like super moving, because you're in this space in which everyone is allowed to be as sexual and as deviant, as perceived deviant as they want to be. But it was like it was supportive, you know, it was like transactional, but it was intimate, but it was like, you could also be like aggressive. It's just so like bizarre that like that what you depicted was a safe space. Like, that's a safe space.
Coming up after the break, directors Lila Weinraub and Ramel Ross discuss how representation on the screen impacts the way people see themselves.
Like, poor white Americans, they're not problematized in the same way. So it's like, when their lives suck, they're like, wait a minute, I didn't see this in a movie.
First, a word from our sponsor. Hey, listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False Podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That's also where we produce this show, here at the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. So we've got Catherine Wheeler here in the studio. Catherine's a graduate student at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and she is a producer on our podcast for True False. Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
I was hoping you could tell us what you mean, or we say, Missouri Method.
Well, with the J School, we're kind of getting thrown into the deep end right away. I don't know any other place where on my first day of class, I was writing feature stories for the local newspaper, and I'm working at the local NPR affiliate doing stories. There are just so many options to really get professional experience even before we go out into our professional careers.
Yeah, the experience stuff is really what stands out, I think.
Yeah.
The True False Podcast is made possible by the University of Missouri. This episode of the True False Podcast is brought to you by the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute. Here to tell us more is the RJI Executive Director, Randy Picht. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Allison.
Can you tell us, what are the RJI Fellowships?
They're a great opportunity for folks in the industry that have big ideas or innovative ideas that they want to try to bring to journalism. And they're a great way for RJI to work on its mission of helping journalism have a long and bright future. Our fellows work on innovative projects that could involve new strategies for the industry, and not necessarily just from journalism. We're always very interested in interdisciplinary projects. We've worked with artists, technologists, entrepreneurs, along with folks from the New York Times and the Washington Post. If it's a good idea that we think can help journalism, sign us up.
That sounds awesome, especially the interdisciplinary part. Are there any projects that you've gotten to witness that you're really excited about?
We did one with an artist that tried to create a piece that could run in the paper that people could take home and frame. It was about gun control. A lot of the interdisciplinary projects get involved with engagement. We like to think that RJI offers the most flexible journalism fellowships around.
Very Midwestern of us.
That's right.
The True False podcast is sponsored by the Reynolds Journalism Institute. You can find out more at rjionline.org. That's rjionline.org. Welcome back to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. Let's get back to our conversation with Layla Weinraub and Ramel Ross.
There's something about like the night or nightclubs where everything is happening, you know? You get to see like how people are, and it's this totally like foggy space where people are like separated and relieved from like their from the daylight. This is really astringent, difficult daytime thing.
Relieved from the daylight.
Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting.
And like, so in that space where it's like murky, it's the dark, you know, light moves different. The way that you remember sound is different. Like when you wake up in the morning the next day, what you remembered happened the last night comes together in this really like interesting way. You're like, what actually happened? What was that? You know? It's a feeling. I guess I was trying to be like, this is every, like, I'm learning everything right here, right now. Like, how can I be aware enough to capture it to be like, no, guys, this is, look here, you know?
Yeah, that's really nice, though. I want to be relieved from the light.
Yeah, definitely. Daytime is hard. I was watching you shoot daylight a lot, and I was like, this is such a different life than I live, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, these are people that live in the daytime. There's children. There's, like, food. There's, like, basketball practice. Yeah. People are young, you know.
People are young. That's so strange, right?
Yeah.
It's weird, yeah. But I do have just as much footage at nighttime.
Really?
Yeah. But the moments, it was all about, like, what moments do we want to show, you know? And those moments didn't correlate appropriately to what we were, like, we trying to conceive.
Okay, so there are things that, like, there's intelligence that happens that needs to get passed on through generations. And you need to have, like, enough stability and stay in one space long enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's about, like, one house for four generations. Well, like, this long stability just changes your... all of these things. Your representation, your ability to represent yourself.
Yeah.
The idea of your own history. And then the idea of your trajectory. It's not like, oh, I'm already in a bad place and now I need to like go find something. You're like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I don't really need to find anything. All I need to do is like, I've started fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there is this issue that I have with documentary films, specifically when the subjects are black and the makers are not black, where there's something where it's like is being problematized, you know, and that the problematizing is coming from an out. It's not that it's bad that the whatever. It's just the problematizing is coming from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it might not be actually what the person is having.
Yeah.
But the problematizing is coming from the outside. So then that happens over and over and over again. So then the storyline over time becomes that this person is in trouble.
Yeah.
And then so you're like, oh, I'm in trouble. I was born into trouble. I, of course, am in trouble. I will get into trouble. I lived trouble. I need to get, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this whole thing, like, happens where you're like, I'm fucked. And then...
And I will fulfill trouble, perhaps.
And I will fulfill... Yeah, totally. I'm bad. I'm born bad, so fuck it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to do it anyway. I got blamed already.
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't I just go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
And there's this other thing, which I think is, like, difficult, I think, for, like, poor white Americans... is that they're not problematized in the same way. So it's like when their lives suck, they're like, wait a minute, I didn't see this in a movie. Hmm. So I don't know if this is where I'm supposed to be.
Hmm.
So they're like, this is actually not my movie. Somebody's taking something from me and I'm going to go get them, you know? And yeah. It makes, that's where, like, that's when people start to fight against each other that are in very similar situations.
Yeah.
They're like, this is not my movie. In my movie, I'm fine.
Yeah.
In my movie, I'm actually the hero.
Yeah.
I actually have a hero's journey to fulfill. I'm not like a phoenix coming out of ashes. That's not my story. My story is not to, like, you know, like,
yeah.
I should be fine.
Yeah.
So there's something, someone's doing this to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And then someone's got to be blamed. And we know who that ends up being just because of popular propagation of media.
Sorry, I got a little intense.
No, not at all. I think that's incredibly true. I think that's the biggest problem. And I think the core, the issue now is like, so bad analogy, but like once the ink is spilled, you can't pull the ink back, right? Like it's gone. It's like it's in the water. So like so even if we began to tell our own problems, if we begin to tell our own stories from the inside, it's so reflective of what's already out there in culture. Like it's hard to tell what the result of that's going to be, you know?
There's something about the dollar that needs to be talked about too. You know, I was like thinking about how everybody in that town worked at the catfish plant and
yeah.
Like there's this thing about like dollars going outside. It makes me think about the current popularity of Black cinema and how that's only going to get more popular over the next decade,
yeah.
Right? And so that's going to make money, period.
Yeah.
And so who's going to benefit from that? Is it going to be like big studios that like have already said no for decades and decades?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden.
And then so now since their system is already built, once the like once there's content there, they'll mm-hmm. just already be there to reap the rewards of the content because they have the structure in place. Or is it going to, like, what are the other options that could happen at this time?
Yeah.
Are you going to make, how do you make Black films for a Black audience without having Black distribution and a Black bank account to collect that money too?
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do it without Black participation in, like, the logistics because the structures already exist. But I really wonder, it's going to take like an incredibly concerted effort to have the money go back into the Black community.
Who's doing that?
Oh, God, you?
No, who's doing that? Me? Yeah, sure. But no, who is doing that? I mean, it's like really, I think it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're like, okay. Because it's also like you get to make a new film because you have resources.
Yeah.
You know? And so like it's like the success of your past things paying to like your ability to make future things. That's like a lot about independence. Like nobody's telling you what to do if like you made your own money.
Yeah.
Like you can kind of demand it. I don't know.
I'm hopeful though. Like I think the onus is on each of us. And I think that if this issue that you're mentioning is continued to be talked about, then those who have an abundance of wealth that are in the positions of the actors and the producers who are Black, like they can begin to make microstructures. Put people in power in smaller places in the country and local governments and like nonprofit organizations and like slowly there will be no structure as powerful as like the white power structure of the US to distribute wealth. You know, like that's the impossibility. It's like such an impossibility to think that there'd be something huge, but maybe that's cynical.
Yeah, it's cynical.
That's all for this episode of the True False Podcast. You can find more of our conversations about nonfiction filmmaking at kbia.org, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you can, leave us a review. It'll help more people find the show. Thank you to directors Layla Weinraub and Ramel Ross for the conversation. This episode was produced by Katie Kokel and edited by Ryan Femuliner and Bram Sablesmith. Our introduction was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds from the True False Film Fest. Join us next time as we discuss a new aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction filmmaking. I'm Allison Kofel. Thanks for listening.